So this is my friend Jason. Jason is awesome. Jason does a podcast with Amber Vlangus, the famous Amber Vlangus from Restorative Action Alliance. So they run the Amplified Voices podcast, and I've met him doing other fun things. And he just recently had a short period of unemployment, and he just recently got a job that he's going to tell us all about. So welcome, Jason.
Yeah, Ann, how much time do you want to give me? Because I think that the story. Yeah, go ahead. I was just gonna say.
Keep going. You think that what?
No, I was gonna because there's more to just my this what I would have to share than just my most recent experience.
Okay, yeah, no, share away.
Share. So I mean, the
Share away.
topic, what's the overarching topic that we're getting
The
at?
overarching topic for the day is finding employment when you're on the registry. A lot of my calls are,
Yep,
my PO
exactly.
called my job. And then I lost my job, or I can't find a job because I'm on the registry and no one will hire me. So I just want to give people some ideas of, like, this trucking job. My friend who's a trucker is like, man, we are desperate. We are desperate. And yes, we'll hire you from if you're on the registry. We're happy to hire you for if you're on the registry. We need people. So
Got
I'm just trying to give people ideas,
Got it.
and hopefully a wide range of ideas because. Not everyone can do all the same things. So
So I'm
I
gonna
just sort
talk a little. I'm gonna
of
try to. I'll try to be really brief about my job journey, and then I'll give some additional thoughts.
Perfect.
So in terms of my why or my background and where I come from. So before I ever had a conviction, I had no problem getting jobs. I had I earned an MBA from Columbia University. I was hired, I would walk in, a recruiter would call me up and say, are you interested in a position over here? And next thing I knew, I'd have a new job. And I worked for after business school, I worked for Ford Motor Company, I worked for General Electric, I worked for United Technologies Automotive, I worked for Cigna Healthcare or Cigna. So there were some big names in decent jobs. Once I was arrested, I could not get a job anywhere. And this goes back. My arrest was in 2008. Between my arrest and conviction, I was actually hired by the local United Way. And when they announced it internally, somebody had seen that I had been arrested, and of course the offer was then rescinded. So, what I ended up doing, this is, again, we're going back to 2009 time frame, was looking around trying to figure out what am I going to do. So this is all relevant. I'll come back to this. So my family had some friends that have a warehouse for that supplies tobacco and candy to the convenience stores. So for I went and I put cartons of cigarettes into bigger boxes to be shipped off to convenience stores. And there's more to that story that I'll save if there are questions or you want me to talk more about it. But I did that for a while. I was looking at potential opportunities. I thought about starting something on my own or buying a business. I went to an organization
Supposedly, the
and
U.S.
gosh,
government, not really related, but almost related. Somebody needs to mute. Somebody, somebody's, somebody's sound from their home is coming through, and we're not having,
There we
not
go.
being able to hear. There we go. Thank you.
Right. So the other thing that I was doing back in those days was, like I said, I was looking for a business that I could potentially buy and run. I looked at a franchise. There's part of that journey that could probably take another half hour I won't go into. I had a business. I got introduced to a couple of businesses that were trying to take advantage of the situation. One of them was a box manufacturer that was going to hire me in as the CFO. And he said, "You know what? I'm going to keep my CFO. I'm going to put you over the CFO as the general manager." Turned out, once I got in I was desperate to take anything. So I'm like, "Sure, I'll do it." Found out that he was doing all sorts of things like illegal dumping of chemicals in the river and was looking for a scapegoat. So I lasted there for a week and said, this is not for me. First time I ever quit a job that, like that. So again, was looking, couldn't really, was trying to find my way. After a few years, I was convicted and I was on probation. I went to the probation officer thinking that they would help. Like, do you have any ideas for me? Can you help me get a job? Nope, you're on your, you need to be employed. You need to bring in your pay stub, but there's nothing I can do to help you. And then I was introduced to a guy that was starting a cost reduction consulting firm. He had been doing it by himself, and I ended up working with him as his first employee. And I stayed on from 2012 to 2024 as his right hand, was acting at like a chief of staff level. I did everything for this organization, and I ended up, I started off making almost nothing, but grew to having a respectable salary. Everything, I could pay my mortgage, I could pay my bills, I could put away for retirement. So things were going okay there. Except that there were a couple of things happening in the business, and the I just I wasn't happy there. I was being again, I felt I was being taken advantage of. He was doing some things, not paying vendors, and so I was getting more and more miserable. I said to my wife, "I'm going to leave." Now, one thing I left off here is in 2021, I was granted a pardon and expungement. So not only, was I not no longer on the registry, but I have a clean record. If you do a background check on me, it's completely clean. And I'm telling you this for a reason, because now I'm going to talk about what happened with my job search in the last year. So I thought everything's going to be really easy now because I have all this experience, I have credentials, I have a clean record, I'm going to get hired. And I replied to some ads right away on Indeed. Now we're talking end of 2024. There was a position open with a funeral home that had, they own a portfolio of funeral homes, and they were looking for a CFO. I applied. I was going, doing, things were going pretty well until I get a call from the family member. It was a family-owned business. Who says, we're not going to move forward with you because of your past. Because even though I have a clean record, people still talk. And people, so he must have, I'm in Connecticut. He knew somebody in the town where I lived, a couple things on my resume that had him, talking to people. And so he's, I'm not moving forward with you. And over the course of, September of 2024 to, November of 2025, I've been in job search mode this whole time. One of the things that I decided I wanted to do, I made it a little bit more difficult for myself. A couple of things have made it more difficult. One is my age. I'm an older man. Two is geography. I'm not going to move out of the area where I am. And then three is I decided to make a career shift. So I wanted to go from I wanted to go somewhere where my background would actually be beneficial to the work I was doing and where I could live openly. This is my thinking. So I actually enrolled in a program at the University of Connecticut called Encore for people who have been in the for-profit world looking for leadership roles in nonprofits. I went through that program. One of the instructors runs a nonprofit here in Connecticut called Career Resources, and they work with a lot of people with criminal records. They have different programs, and I was hired in December. I started with Career Resources in a halfway house where I'm the employment case manager, helping guys get employed. So that's a little bit about where I've been. Now, even now, I don't I'm not able to talk about I can't talk to the client or residents or clients about my past or share anything with them. So that's not, it's not quite what I wanted, because I'd like to be more open. I'm also hesitant sometimes to bring it up to other staff members. that don't some in my I was very open about it when I applied on my cover letter. I talked about my past. I talked about it in the interviews, so I was not hiding anything. But there are other staff members that don't know, and I've been in some conversations where I feel like it wouldn't go so great if they found out. So I guess that's really some of the journey. One of the things I want to share with people from even now doing the work that I'm doing, helping people get jobs, is that anybody who comes in and says, "I did this, so you should do the same path," is selling you something. Every path is unique. Everything is different. People have different skill sets. People have different circumstances. Every state has different requirements. Every region is different. So the one thing I know for sure is that just blindly applying on Indeed is not, if you get a job doing that, that's just luck. But that's not the answer. It's about networking, tapping into every resource that you have, every person that you have, being open and looking for advice and guidance, and figuring out what are my skills and how can I apply them to somewhere that is within reason for me to get this job. So, Anne, how did I do? I know we're I'm not sure how we're doing on time, but you're muted, Anne.
Yes, sorry. It took me a minute to find my mute button because it's dark in
Right.
my car. You're fine. I mean, we've got 90 minutes to talk. I know that you have to get to bed early because you get up really early. I've checked in with both of my other speakers and they're like, that's fine. So if you have another 10 minutes of talking you want to do, that's
I'll
so
just add that,
I wanted this to be a community discussion where more than one voice showed up because there's a lot of different kinds of jobs.
So I mean, I did take this job because it gets me into the reentry field. There's a pros. I feel like I'm really making a difference. Like I know I'm somebody who cares. There are people that I work with or have worked in proximity with who don't care. They're more concerned with risk mitigation versus making sure that people are on a good path. Every person I work with, it's not just about getting them a job, but I try to talk to them about how do you set yourself up to get an even better job down the road.
Nice.
I helped. There was one guy that I worked. So in the house where I am, there were two guys that had sex convictions. I haven't told them about my past, but I hope my humanity comes through. And one of them was towards the end of his stay at the house and was going into like a step down. There's not as much supervision. He's gonna still have a parole officer, but he's not in a house with all these rules. He's gonna be living in an apartment with one other person. And hit the job that he was able to get. This is a guy who's got he's very handy. He has a whole bunch of tools. He got a job in a doing like hydraulics repair. And in order to get to his job, it starts before the buses run. He's got no money. It's before the buses run. And so there I found a resource in Eastern Connecticut that will provide him with free rides back and forth. But it has to be managed by a case manager. You fill out the forms, you send them in. So I had it all set up and arranged before he left. I put all this stuff through and then handed it off to the new case manager, or so I thought. All I had was an email address and the parole officer's email. So I sent it to the case manager, parole officer, followed up two or three times, pre-filled the forms, said all you have to do is put in your name, get the exact times and send it into this email address by this time. No word, no word, no word. The guy called me in a panic from his job. He had already left the house. Can you help me? I said, I want to help. I talked to my boss. I said, I want to help this guy. I want to put this through. She said, fine, but that's the last time they have to pick it up. Someone else has to pick it up, or they have to be take some responsibility. So she wanted me to stop working on it. But I'm going to tell you that if it weren't for me, in this particular case, this guy would not have a job because he would have lost his job. And so It ended up the parole officer did pick it up, but because I made enough noise. But I think I guess what I would go back to is there's you, people have to have a bit of luck on top of everything else. And also, if it's possible for people from our community to get into these types of roles, it really will make a difference. So I guess that's
Yeah,
my
Jason, I really loved what you said. And after I get home in another 5 minutes or so, I got another one of my members had responded, and he couldn't be here tonight because I think he works. But he sent me a long thing about just why it's important for people on the registry to be in these nonprofit spaces, because a lot of the time, reentry work, they're trying to make changes, but they will carve us out. At the last minute, people on the registry get carved out of their changes. And when we sit on these boards, when we do the work and share in the workload, then they get to know us as human beings. And then the people who are working in the reentry space who just have other kinds of convictions start to see us as human. And then when it comes time to do a carve out, they're less likely to want to carve us out. So we people on the registry and people who are registry adjacent need to be sitting in these spaces and sharing this humanity with the world, so that eventually maybe we don't get carved out. So I love that you. So did they eventually pick up the load on this guy that needed rides?
And in fact, I said there were two guys who have who had sex convictions, and the other guy, I was talking with him today. He had a mandated group program that he was going to, and he said that his group starts right after the other guys end. So he saw him today, and he said he's doing really well. And he's getting to his job. He's really happy. So that's really cool.
Nice. And that must feel great.
The other
Must
thing
feel
I want to
great for
say is
you.
that the other thing I want to say is that I put in a proposal for the NARSOL conference for me and a guy named JB out of California. So I'm in Connecticut. He's in California, and we're working on a whole presentation on this topic for one of the breakout sessions. So
Oh, I
hopefully, it gets
love that.
approved. I got a PowerPoint set up. He's going to add some things, very specific, but just talking about some of what I laid out, but in more detail. And then we're at Restorative Action Alliance. We have, I think it's November 3rd. It's right at the beginning of November. We're going to update whatever we do mid-year, and do another report on just this whole topic. So more to come
That's awesome.
throughout the year.
That's awesome. Because I tell you what, parole officers, when I answer the 800 line, the number of times people will tell me, "Oh, I found a job, but then my parole officer insisted on calling my job and telling them that I'm the registry, and every time they do that, I immediately lose my job." It seems like sometimes people in law enforcement and people who have power over us are actually not helping at all. Like they're intentionally, they have to know that that's causing problems. So it's like they're intentionally messing with us.
I mean, I'm seeing all sorts of stuff right now because it's really, I've by choice now I'm answering to parole again, right? So it's a challenge because they make us do certain things. They make us validate the employment before somebody can start working. This guy that I talked about, the other guy, he wasn't employed when I got there in December. He had been there since October, been working, working, working. He came from the auto parts industry. His family owned an auto parts store. He got hired by AutoZone, and then the human resources department said, "No way is he coming here." And they did the background check. And then he finally got hired by a grocery store. Didn't tell them anything, but I said I have to validate that everything is, how much he's going to make, when he's got all this stuff. And I wanted to do it in a way that was not going to backfire on him. And I went to my boss and I said, "I've got all this stuff in an email." It all said, "Nope, you've got to actually talk to somebody over there." So today was his first day. I went over, I spoke with a manager, and it could have easily backfired. But I walked in and I said, I said to them, this guy's fantastic. You're lucky to have him, but here's some, like, if he ends up working late, we just need someone from the store to call, but you're never going to have any problem with him. He's fantastic. And so, hopefully, and they seem very receptive and happy, and things were good, but I could see that backfiring, and it's frustrating.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, Jason, I really appreciate you coming on. And I
With
really
it.
look forward to seeing your presentation at NARSOL.
Yeah.
And I will 100% be sharing anything that's easily shareable with the war group, because I think this is, employment is employment and housing. If we
Did
can
you
just.
want, yeah, did you want to do any questions before other people
Yeah,
call?
absolutely.
All right.
Yeah. Hang on a second. I'm at my house, but I still got to unlock the door. But yes, if anybody has a question for Jason, please raise your hand. And shortly I will be inside on my computer and I can see who has their hands up. Okay.
I
And
have a
Chuck, if you see any hands up, you can call on people too.
My name is Ron A. I have a question for Jason.
Hey, Ron.
How you doing today? I'm
Good.
sorry, my camera, I'm not too tech savvy. When I'm in the middle of things, I'm afraid I'm going to shut off completely, so bear with me. So when a person gets a job or applies for a job, at what point, in your opinion, would you recommend that they say anything about their past?
How about a big, it depends. So it depends. I guess, first I would not, I don't, I had a guy come and sit down in front of me, and I said, "Tell me about yourself." I said, I'm gonna do a pretend interview with you. Tell me about yourself." And he said, "Well, I was arrested a few years." I said, "Stop. You want to lead with all your qualities, these are all the skills that I have. These are the ways, what things are the things that I can bring to the job." At during that process, it depends. If you're not on any supervision, if you're just, if it's just a matter of being on the registry, you have to kind of feel out the risk. If you're on a public registry, is there a risk that people are going to find out? Because it inevitably happens. I have found that when you're completely honest with people, like, without going into details, but just talking about, what did I learn? How did I change? What am I going to bring? What value do I bring to this organization?
Right.
Those are things that it makes a difference, and it allows people to show up without that fear of, when is the next shoe going to drop? When is someone going to find out? So even though it might close a door early on to have it be known, having it out in the open is better than having them find out and then firing you on the spot after you've invested some extra time.
Okay.
Okay. Because you
So
also have to explain, right? Now you have to explain, why were you fired? Why were you at that place for so short a time?
right.
So it's what, from what I understand, a lot of the larger organizations are tougher than, say, like a family-owned smaller organization, more local. If there's something that's a chain, but it's more local, that you might have more luck with one of those.
Well, unfortunate, well, fortunately and unfortunately, I am, I would say, trapped at Wendy's. Bless their hearts. I love them because they didn't question my past. I told them they didn't have a problem with it. They hired me. And from day one, I had the same work ethic as I had back when I was a young man in the military. I had high integrity and high standards. That's what I bring. I will not back off for any reason. And so I kind of think that maybe before the end of the interview, maybe mention that, okay, because again, unfortunately, I caught my case in Missouri. And so the terminology, they have me as lifetime supervision, which to them is lifetime tether. Okay. When I interstate compacted up here to Michigan, they interpreted that as lifetime with a probation officer or parole officer. Okay. So I got a struggle ahead of me. So.
But I think, going back to what I said, like, trying to find ways to, like, figure out what it is you want to do, like the work that you want to make sure it's realistic, And then reach out to other people that are doing that kind of work and talk to them and be straight with them before an interview. Like you're talk to somebody and say, hey, this is my skill. I've got military background. Now I have food services background. I have this background. I have that background. And I also have, I have this other thing that I'm dealing with, but I'm a great worker. Like, what would you recommend I do? Like, talk to people in your community. And if someone's going to help you, then say to them, who else can I talk? Right? Who else would you recommend I talk to? And if you can network, that's how you get from one person to the next person. Eventually you hit somebody who says, I like this guy, Ron. I know where you'd be perfect. This is a great thing. But it goes back to my comment before. Like, you can't just say, well, Jason, you did this, I'm gonna do the same thing, or Patrick did something else. It's everything's even some of the stuff I talked about, the job that I got with this cost reduction guy, like walking out today, maybe that I wouldn't be able to even get the job I got in 2012. Like, the situations are totally different and unique for each person and each location and set of circumstances, and people that you're talking to are different. So, maybe the United Way today would hire me when they wouldn't back in 2009. I don't know.
All right.
So,
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
you're welcome.
I think Candace, you had your hand up next. Let me unmute you.
Yes. Hi.
Oh, no, I didn't mute.
I did. Yeah. Okay. So, Jason, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. And your information was amazing. So, I work with people that are getting out of prison as well. And I've had a guy I was working with recently who got a job as a delivering pizzas. His agent called up. He lost his job. He's on the registry, of course. He lost it. And I'm like, all right, I don't understand, what they're doing, but it's so frustrating. He ended up getting a job at a warehouse. What the agents here in Wisconsin are doing is exactly that, gearing everybody into warehouse work. And I've got guys that are business, like they've got degrees, and they're like, what am I doing in a warehouse? And do you know that they recently tried to pass a bill here in Wisconsin that agents would get a bonus if they are able to get jobs for people? And can you imagine how that'll turn out?
That is crazy.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I don't understand.
I'll tell you, when I worked in the warehouse, though, I started, they needed somebody to put, to fill the orders. And so I walked in there, and I'm a process improvement guy. So I'm walking around, I'm saying, the way you're handling this part of the business is could be improved. And I would make projects for myself. And so I slowly got myself out of walking around the warehouse. I'm not a warehouse floor guy. So I got myself out of that and I was doing other projects that saved them money, made it more efficient. Those are my that's my stuff. And then they trusted me, so they had me. They were heavy cash business, so they had machines that were better than what the bank had for counting cash. So they had me counting their cash, because they trusted me. So I mean, it got me doing, and I was talking with customers or calling in orders. So I got to see a whole lot of different things, because I was making new jobs for myself
Which
in
is
that
a
warehouse.
great, I mean, that's amazing. And that's something I think I could tell my people also, when you're in that position, maybe kind of look a little bit ahead, don't just take this for granted and this is what you're going to do. Look, like you just said, I think that's a really good incentive for people. And I think that's a great idea. So thank you for that.
And I think the one thing I told you, one of the staff members where I am told one of these guys, you have to humble yourself. You have to humble yourself.
Like, really.
I give the exact opposite message. I say, look, you are here right now. This is the reality, but anything that you do is respectable, it's honorable, and it's crap that you got to do it, but you can learn from every situation.
That's true.
Even if what you learn is you never in your life want to ever work at Taco Bell again, that's a learning. That's a learning. That's something you've learned. Like, you learn all these types of things.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that if people go through and they take that view, like, how can I make this better? How can I make it better for my, like, think like an entrepreneur, even when you're working for somebody else. Think like the boss.
Right.
Like, how can I make this better? How can I make the workday better for my boss? How can I make things easier for my boss?
Right.
When the people do that, they'll get recognized, right? They'll have other opportunities, and maybe the warehouse says, you know what, you've outgrown us,
Right.
and one of our customers wants to hire you. It could be
Right.
something like, or a vendor to them.
Absolutely.
So just being, you can't, if you sit in your house playing video game, you're just not gonna have the opportunities. But no matter,
Right.
no, even if you're McDonald's, putting stuff together at 2 a.m., you're doing something valuable, right? I mean, so
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. All
Yeah,
right. Thank
sadly, the DOC. Oh, I'm sorry, Anne. I was just going to say, sadly, the DOC has people believing they're nothing, right? And that's a true reality for many people. But thank you so much for that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right, Nina.
Hi, everybody. So, quick question, Jason. What are your thoughts, I guess, on starting, I guess, your own business or starting
Love
your
it.
own?
So one of the things I've been doing for since that 2012 mark, I've been a volunteer with an organization called SCORE. It's a national nonprofit that has a whole bunch of mentors. They offer free mentoring to entrepreneurs who are starting their business. And I'm actually the treasurer for half of Connecticut. And sometimes the district for all of Connecticut. But and I've done some mentoring, and the questions come up whenever there's been people who are formerly incarcerated. I raise my hand and say I'd like to be involved in these initiatives. So here's the thing: becoming your own boss, is more work than working for somebody else. It does offer a level of autonomy, and it's wonderful if you can do it. There is a level of risk because a lot of businesses fail, but there's an extra added risk for people on the registry. All it takes is a competitor to come out and start advertising to the world, that you're on the that this person's on the registry, and your business is, your whole livelihood's gone. So everything that you go to work up. So I say, I love the idea of business ownership for people. I've toyed with the idea many times. I'm very risk averse, so I have never done it because I'd rather not lose everything. But
Makes sense. I do know
if
people
you
who
think
do
about
it.
all the factors that can come into play with somebody, just if you're doing, see, here's the thing: if you don't do well, nobody cares, right? But if you're doing well, they come after you. And I've seen cases where the guy runs a pizza restaurant, and he's on the registry, and they go after him. It really depends on the business, what the risk level is. There may be some opportunities, like the way I was working in this cost reduction firm. I was operating as a number two. I never asked for equity, but I really should have been an equity owner. It should I you know uh, I but you could be. You could work out arrangements with people where, it's in the business is in somebody else's name. I know, yeah, I was thinking about this the other day. LLC is not for me, but you could do something if you're really creative, but I would just say proceed with a lawyer.
Awesome. Okay,
Thank you.
Stephen, and then after Stephen, we'll go on to my next speakers. Unmute, you're unmuted.
I'm unmuted, I think.
Yes, you are.
First off, I apologize for being late. Candace, I would like to talk to you more. I'm in Wisconsin. Yes, I am a registrant. In short, I guess I'll say I was fortunate and unfortunate that 40 years ago I did an apprenticeship with a union. It did not work out for me for all types of reasons. I left the union for th 38 years, came back after my arrest because I lost licenses and things like that, being a registrant. I currently am working, making long hours, making over $120,000 a year. So I think that the trades are the way to go. And then what I'm going to try to do also, because I am college educated and want to, I'm not real happy necessarily working with some of the people that I work with. Try to get into the other side of things. Definitely, it would be a pay cut, but in the trades, they're more con they're very concerned about your driving record and overlook a lot of felonies. But I also will say, and I'd like to talk to you more about the Wisconsin DOC and the challenges being a registrant and the big variety with the POs, having had three different POs, one that was strict but so-so, one that was lazy and obstruction was very obvious. And then the third one kind of realized that I was going to be successful with my probation one way or another and gave me a lot more freedom. But I am active with the Wisconsin DOC. The secretary of Wisconsin DOC is Jared Hoy, and I'm in touch with him routinely. Are you in Wisconsin, Candace?
Candace, I don't know.
You are?
I don't know about Candace.
Yes, I am.
What area of Wisconsin?
I'm in the Milwaukee area.
I'm in Ozaukee County.
Okay. I'm going to
So,
put my number, I'll chat the number to you, my phone number, and then we can talk.
thank you. And I
Love
apologize
it.
for being late.
Love it. All right. I was late too. I'm not going to, it's no problem. Okay, well, thank you very much, Jason. I'm sorry you have to get up at 4 in the morning or whatever ridiculous time you start your drive. And I'm going to call you tomorrow afternoon on my drive
Right,
on your way
sounds
home.
good. I'll stay on a few more minutes.
Okay. All right. So now I want to introduce two people, Elizabeth and Josh. And hang on, I don't know how to find. Could one of you say some? Oh, there's Elizabeth. Okay, so I'm going to pin and then Josh. Josh, can you talk so I can pin you too? That's okay. Elizabeth, start sharing. So my friend Josh works for a company, and he has been just really just talking up like, we need more drivers. We need more drivers. He's been sharing that with all my friends. And I have three friends who recently took the training to become drivers to start doing this job. And Elizabeth is one of those people. Elizabeth just applied for a grant and took the training and is currently in the process of applying for all the things that they need to apply for. So take it away, Elizabeth.
Hi everybody. I'm going to start a little bit with my background. I actually used to be a program coordinator at a community college. And so I can talk on a macro level that if you're looking for like short certification type opportunities, do check with your community college. I know everybody here is from all over the place. And so, your community college system could vary as to what they offer for adult learners or non-traditional learners, but there's a whole kick in community college world that you can try to get employable skill certificates and you can try to do fast track educational programs. So I'm going to talk mostly about trucking because that's the career switch that I'm making right now. But I would urge you that if that's not something that interests you at all or anything trucking adjacent, some community colleges have robust adult education and even like prison education programs. There's a big kick in that where they even offer college classes to prisoners. So looking into those pathways might be worth taking a look at if this doesn't interest you, if this particular field doesn't. The additional thing of, that I know from being on the back end of the community college world, and really career education in general in like desirable fields or like fields where we have deficits, right? Is that there's grant money everywhere and it's still there. It changes, ebbs and flows, whatever. When an organization applies for a grant, they want to spend that grant. They're required to spend that grant. And they're concerned that if the grant ever came around again and they don't spend it, they're not going to be able to get that kind of grant money again. So, why did I get truck driving school for free? Because of this grant. There are several different kinds of grants that, when it comes to truck driving, depending where you are and what organizations you're dealing with, I would start with a community college if you have one that does that. But there's plenty of other organizations that can get you that kind of education. There are several kinds of grants that have kind of train people to be truck drivers. The WIOA one, which is a Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, is still pretty active. There was another one that was initiated during COVID times, American Rescue Plan Act, and my local community college got access to that funding. And the barriers to entry were pretty low, at least for receiving the funding. The barriers to entry to truck driving are a different set of things, and I can tell you about that too. But for that particular grant, this program that I did CDLA. And let me go ahead and differentiate. The CDLA and CDLB are both really decent certifications and options. CDLA is for somebody who wants to have like the top king level truck driving certification. And that gives you the ability to pull more than, I mean, you've got something with a trailer on it, like a semi truck, and the gross weight of that may be more than 26,000 pounds. And it could be, I mean, on average, a loaded semi truck is more than 80K. So that's a high level certification. It took me full time, an entire month to get that. But CDLB, the lower level, that's for anything that it's not really a trailer. It's going to be like dump trucks or straight trucks, like more single vehicle kind of stuff. If you have a Department of Transportation that is local to you, the people who do tar Department of Transportation driving your snow plows and driving your garbage trucks and picking up stuff on the side of the road when somebody blows a tire, they just run around and pick up stuff on the side of the road. These are local jobs because I know that local is important for this community because not always
Yes, it is.
interstate ability, right? Class B only takes like 5 days, like full time, and you can knock that out and still get higher earning potential and potentially better jobs in that field. So class A is like 5 days, at least in the program that I did, but there are ways to fast track through this, whatever. And then I mean, sorry, that class B, and then class A is like the higher level one where we were driving semi trucks around. And you have to go through, I mean, a bunch of kind of dumb steps to get this stuff. I have a master's in environmental science and policy. So this is a big career change for me. I worked at a community college as a program coordinator. I'm an academic, whatever. But the value of the class that I took was like $6,500. I'm addicted to certifications and taking classes in general. And if I, you know, if you gain skills, or even like learn about adjacent careers, it doesn't harm you if you're able to, you know, learn something and then find another route or find a thread that connects. So I felt like I didn't have too much to lose because I'm unemployed, so I had the time
But it's a good
to.
job, right? I mean,
Sorry.
I'm hoping that when Joshua talks, he shares with us like you make decent money.
So trucking, even in CDLB territory, is like if you work for the Missouri Department of Transportation and you're just driving snow plows or you're picking up tires on the side of the road, you'll start at like 18 and they will pay you to get trained. Your training will be during paid time. So that's the starting level for this. And then yes, trucking, if you get into something particular, or special, and you get higher and higher certifications, your earning potential is higher, obviously. So if you can find a way to get it financed via grant, especially, even if not, like if you have to pay for some kind of training, this, I don't know, I did a lot of research before I went into this as an avenue, and I was like, yeah, this seems like a good certification to get, and if I don't like it, there will be an adjacent career that I can kind of track into. So that said, like when it comes to a lot of this grant funding, I found that they're very liberal, and you can check with your local trucking programs. Also, every state has some local agency for joblessness. It's the same organization that people have to go and check in with if you're getting like unemployment or some adjacent organization. Missouri has like SLATE in locally. They have a whole bunch of different acronyms for stuff, but these organizations can usually point you in the right direction for whatever kind of funding exists for free training. And this training, like the grant, was basically, I mean, they want to give the money away so badly that all I had to do was submit a paragraph or less. I mean, 4 to 5 sentences, a liberal paragraph, like not even a academic paragraph that just says money is hard. pretty much. And as long as you can do that and you can demonstrate that you haven't had a really profound income, I mean, I mean profound is that, like, I mean 50K or more. And even 50K, if you had kids and additional responsibilities, you can just justify that. Money is hard. And I was able to get a $6,500 program for free, which is pretty cool. I mean, so I'm like, okay, sure, why not? Let's do that. And I don't know, like the financial requirement thing was one thing. Then getting into it, there are additional barriers that I did not anticipate. So my recommendation for your community, knowing where some people are at with this, is if you're gonna do truck driving or try to get into even a training program, explore the employers around you first. Talking to people, like our presenter had mentioned, going with small businesses or family-owned companies, you might be able to find an employer that is very interested in you and says, yeah, if you can get the certification, I will hire you. Because it's all a case-by-case kind of thing, then that you don't want to choose to do this, invest in this, because it's a big investment. It's hard. Learning how to drive a semi truck is hard. But if you're concerned about job prospects, exploring around you first and then talking to people and seeing who might be good for hiring you first before you commit that energy, if you're really concerned about that, would be a good call. I see a hand up. I can stop and answer that
Yes, let me
question.
see.
I can keep going.
Where did that hand go?
We have two.
Who was first, Michael or Candace? I think Candace was first.
Okay.
Hey, I just wanted to say I had I'm really glad that you're sharing this information. My brother was trying to get a job who with a trucking company, and his PO t said no way. Partly, he was going to have to drive out of the state. So is that a big problem that you're finding with people that are on the registry where they're looking to travel, even if there's a route that they have, because that's what he would have had, and trying to get the approval for each, it was insane.
Yeah, that would be harder for sure. But like the company that Josh works for, he sleeps in his own bed every night. So there are good jobs to be had that stay right in, local.
Absolutely right.
Right. And in my research on that, right, it's like, I don't know, local deliveries of Pepsi, if you could find that Pepsi was interested. And I would try to suggest at least initiating conversations pre even investing in the education, even if the education's free. And some employers will pay you to do it. Like they need snow plow drivers because it snows and they don't have any reserves for that. Or they need people to go and do garbage truck and whatever, things like that. So getting something local for many people, everyone's situation is different, might be the best, at least first call, because some carriers after that would hire you if you didn't have, if you had been 3 or 7 years out. I mean, like from your parole or probation or whatever. So that will definitely expand opportunities for interstate versus intrastate. But intrastate certainly does exist. What I'm understanding from what I'm looking at is that intrastate is absolutely still a possibility, and might be a great starting point to gain the experience. Because if you have at least a year of experience under your belt and the certification, then I mean, people desperately begin to want you. And if you have 3 years of experience, it's like, okay, now the world is your oyster. Even if you were on some kind of if you're just outside of your felony or parole or probation. So yeah, I was thinking about how that would apply to this community.
Yes, thank you, Elizabeth.
Okay, so I
Okay, I
see
have another hand
Stephen
up.
and Michael.
Yeah, I thought Michael was next, and then Stephen. Michael, you're up.
Yeah, I was just going to say on the truck driving, I haven't talked to a friend for probably a couple years, but he couldn't find a job. So he started buying dump trucks. And, and now the last time I talked to him a couple years ago, probably, he said he's always got at least two trucks loaded. All he needs is somebody with the CDL and a clear driving record. But, like the trade schools have such a demand that I
Yes.
think proficiency and technical expertise means more than something that happened 10 or 15 years ago.
So my understanding, based on my journey in getting into this, is that the most important thing is your driving record. Like if you have a DWI or DUI within the last 5 years or maybe even ever, yeah, you're going to probably have struggles. But if that's what they care about, like, you know, did you get caught with like several speeding violations? Have you been at an at-fault accident that like looks bad on your driving record? But the technical skills are so necessary and so in demand that your driving record really is the most important thing. If you have a pretty good driving record, and clean driving history and whatever, and also they care that you have citizenship ideally, lately. But if you have that, then yes, there's a lot of demand, and it's in all the trade fields across any trades. I looked into all the trades. I'm interested in trades, and it's like driving concrete. Like, you can just drive trucks that spin and deliver concrete, and they desperately need people to do that. And so yeah, the criminal record part, it will matter on a case-by-case basis, depending who your employer is. But the driving record is key. And then also, I mean, there are some requirements, and I was going to get into that, regarding, like, physical, mental health stuff, and additionally, like, drug use. Like they drug test you. So, but I mean, a lot of people here are familiar with that. That's not a problem. You're not going to be at risk for not passing a drug test. And then physically, if you're like, if you have certain, I guess drugs that you're on, if it's an amphetamine, you're going to need a doctor's note. If you have a obesity issue and a compounding problem, you have to do this physical every year, like for high blood pressure or cholesterol or whatever with it, because they want to make sure that you don't have sleep apnea and whatever and end up falling asleep on the road. Like, they're concerned about anything that could impact safety. So those are barriers to entry, which I think people should know about before they start getting into it. But if you can pass through the DOT physical, then yeah, initiating this kind of education could expand your horizons a lot and get you into anything trucking adjacent. I mean, warehouse work was something Jason had mentioned. Well, you can forklift drive. If you get a forklift, that's not a CDL thing, but if you get forklift, that already brings up your earning potential or being good at loading, being a dispatcher for trucking. Like, there's offshoots here that can work. So anyways, that's too much of a ramble. Stephen, what do you have as a question?
I was going to make a comment. In Wisconsin, I actually was driving truck for a short time, while on probation, and I was driving in Illinois almost every single day. That probation agent allowed this, and I needed to renew my travel permit because I was doing deliveries, not knowing where I was doing deliveries. She gave me, let's say, 6 counties in Illinois that I could go into. And that was really very easy. The other thing is, if you're doing something like you said, trucking, and you brought up concrete or construction, for someone who's on the registry, if you look for that type of work that has OSHA requirements pretty much saying no minors there, it gives you a lot of flexibility to do things where even while on probation, I was working on a construction site at a school, and it was said that because there was a fence and it was a construction site, it was not considered the school, even though it was that address. So that those types of things, when you're looking for construction or trucking or delivery, to keep that in mind, hypothetically, car parts or truck parts would be a real good thing to be delivering, because it's not like you're going to be stopping at even a restaurant.
Daycare. Right.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah. And honestly, another thing, somebody, you know, I asked the members to just, if you have ideas, share them with me. And I had a couple of people contact me and said, like, I won't be able to be there. But one of them said one of his best advice he ever got was, actually look on the registry for where people work. And if you look on the registry and there's a bunch of dots in blue at this at this place, well, that's a place that might hire you, because they've obviously not, you know, they've hired people in the past. So I thought that was a brilliant way to look into it. He said, if it's just one dot, you know, just one blue dot, maybe not, because that's probably like, could be their uncle or their grandma. But if there's more than one blue dot on the map, Well, then obviously those people are willing to hire someone on the registry. Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah, I just Josh had been muted the whole time, so Josh is going to now feel free to chime in when necessary. Go on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much done talking. I mean, all I could say is that one of my friends actually went into trucking well before I considered doing it, and they made a mistake at their company. I don't know, they were tired, they were doing long haul or something, and they damaged, I don't know, they damaged a part of the truck somehow, and they got fired. And the way that they like fixed their career was finding a company that was actually also noted as like for, you know, they're friendly for recovering felons and people who've been to prison and whatever, because it does exist. There are companies that do advertise that this is something that they do. And they were able to get hired even though they were like new into their career and they messed something up. So it was another rehab opportunity. And even though they didn't have a prison related record of any kind. So there are things that exist. I'm sure you have to comb through them per usual extra carefully. To make sure, and like I said, on the front end, maybe getting somebody that kind of guarantees that they're interested, or that can that you can interview. That is like, yeah, you know, we wouldn't find that was an issue for us. Smaller companies, like Jason suggested, might be a great way to start. And then also, yeah, I mean, if you can find somebody like Jason, who advocates for you, who works in a field or in a world where they're capable of helping connect you with opportunities and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, as a former community college program coordinator, that's my best advice. Find somebody like that, because navigating through all of this junk is really super annoying, even from the best of mental states and the best of positions. And I can't imagine how hard it is, you know, if you have to start from behind the line there and justify everything.
Getting a lot of no's at the beginning of your efforts, you know, for a lot of people, you get a bunch of no's, they just shut down and they don't want to do it anymore, which right. I totally understand.
And yeah, I could say that, you know, every job, any job, all jobs, you know, it's like choosing a relationship. It's really like you're choosing your pros and cons and what your problems are going to be. Like everything is a different set of problems. So certainly, you know, I'm sure this career, I mean, I'm just about to start it, is not without all kinds of annoyances and problems, but it seems to have a lot of really cool opportunities. And from there you can move to a lot of, I can give an email. Okay. And from there you can move on to a lot of things. If you don't like it, like I've already got like a 6-month plan at reevaluation, because I burned out of a job pretty hard. And when you do that, it's injurious to you for a long period of time. So I'm like, okay, well, if I don't like this, I'm going to reevaluate in 6 months about how I feel about it. And if I want to pivot another direction, in a year, how I feel about it, if I want to pivot in another direction. Jason had mentioned a story of where he quit a job in 1 week. If you are finding that you get into a situation where somebody wants you to do something illegal, or, you know, there's power dynamics at play that are not going to be healthy for you, there's a term, fail forward. Quit immediately and get the hell out of there. You don't even have to put it on your resume. Like, leave.
That's a lesson I can give. Yeah, lesson you learned in that job that you stayed at for 3 years. And by the time you left, you were like, you just wanted to jump off of the bridge.
Yeah, I don't know. I've studied this a lot, and that's my general, I don't know, that's some general career advice from all of the studying that I've done lately and the books that I've read and et cetera. It proves true because those places, often going from a hell no to a meh is a lot of distance. Going from a meh or even like a hell yeah to a meh, that's not as much difference. Like, you want to be happy because you're going to spend all your time doing this. This is something that is going to be a relationship and an identity. Jobs are identities. So that's the only thing. I'll close with that and take any kind of questions, or we should might as well move on to Josh.
I mean, if you can stay and answer questions later too, that'd be great. All right, Josh, you're up. And I'm okay. Sorry that I forgot to unmute you earlier. I'm a dumbass.
That's fine. So I've been truck driving for, close to 10 years. The last job I had before delivering fuel for a living was for Zip Express, which was a broker company. They pretty much contract with everyone, like DHL, Forward Air, UPS. And there were a lot of people that were ex-convicts and on the sex registry. And their questions are, can they drive? Do they have a clean record? Okay, we don't care about their past. As long as they can, you know, our insurance approves them, that's all that matters. And the capacity to which these jobs are filled is getting worse. So it was like 66% or two-thirds filled to capacity of what every company needed. And that's with them working 10 to 14 hours a day. And now it's 60%. So it's gotten worse in the past 10 years. And it's only the majority, the average age of a truck driver is just 55. And that's a lot of people that are over 60. They're about to retire.
And Josh, you said that they're always asking you for more overtime. So they have like, there's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and plus, like, I make $26.05 an hour now, and like, it's union. I'm guaranteed a raise every year. Concrete trucks, they make more, but they generally don't give overtime, and they don't work when the weather's bad or it's cold. But like, in comparison, making $43 an hour, no overtime, and you don't work when the weather's bad outside. Kind of, I've been thinking about it. Like you can work with your dispatcher if you can't leave the state. They can make sure you're, you know, be honest with them at what you can do, what you can't. Keep them updated. If your PO talks to them, and they'll have no problem, you know. And there's a lot of self-management. Like, you're not micromanaged when truck driving. So a lot of times I'll get my route. And as soon as I get my route, unless something changes in my route, I pretty much have the whole day of unsupervised work. A lot of the contracts that I do, they do some school fuel delivery, but like you could just let them know I can't do that. And they'll give you a route where it's mostly construction or going down, like the construction jobs, if they're building buildings, there's not going to be anyone around you for over 500 feet. So you don't have to worry about that. Same with contract constructions, like concrete trucks, dump trucks. There are a lot of people that once they buy their dump truck, they decide they're going to work for themselves. Because if you, after working for a couple of years, if you have enough to put down payment on a dump truck, instead of getting paid, you know, 25 to 50 bucks an hour, you can say, I'm going to get 250 bucks an hour and subcontract myself out. And then, you know, getting paid that much, you know, even if something takes longer than it has to be, there's no rush about it. And if something happens, like a lot of trucking jobs are forgiving. Like, so as long as you get in an accident and you're 100% truthful of what went on and like you don't total like six trucks in you know, your first year, a lot of them are forgiving and will work with you. So what they consider a clean driving record for the most part is if on average you have one fender bender or, you know, 1.5 fender benders on average a year, they would still consider that safe-ish for their insurance. They won't be that happy about it, but a lot of times there's, you know, three accidents involving another vehicle, and then they have to, you know, write you up or talk about termination or do extra training or something like that. And
yeah, Josh tells a story about a guy who drove a truck on fire into the lot, parked it with all the other trucks full of fuel, left in a different car, and they didn't want to fire him.
Yeah, so it's very, That's if you don't desperate. Think you can be a truck driver, this guy decided to drive with a low air alarm, and when the PSI drops below 45, the emergency brakes engage. So he drove on the highway with all eight tires spinning or not spinning the whole way. He knew this was going on. So the fuel truck was on fire before he got off the highway. He decided he was going to still drive the truck back to our fuel lot, you know, where we keep all of our fuel and oil, until the back tires exploded right outside the gate. Then he hops out of the truck. He doesn't call 911. He doesn't try to put it out. Doesn't let anyone know. He hops in another truck, loads that truck, and just leaves the other one burning. The only reason why he got fired is because at the last job he was at in the second truck, he ripped off one of the hoses and leaked 1,700 gallons of fuel out, leaving a trail all the way back to the yard. So if the EPA would have found out, that would have been a quarter of a million to half million dollar fine that we couldn't have fought as a company. That's the only reason they fired him. He had six fender benders, all involving stationary objects like bright yellow poles that are designed to keep you from hitting other things. And he didn't get fired or written up for that. So it's very secure and desperate position. And as I'm sure a lot of trades are, but like, unlike plumbing or electrician work or carpentry or stuff like this, because a lot of the times you can choose your routes and you do know where you're going to be. You can choose routes and places that you can deliver that are, you know, meeting your legal parameters of can't be around. And it doesn't matter if you've, you know, just gotten out and you just gotten your CDL or you've had it, you know, in the past. Also, hazmat, if you haven't had anything in your past in 7 years, a lot of times you can get hazmat. If you can't get hazmat, then instead of delivering fuel, sticking to jobs like concrete, dump truck, or even like delivery companies that just do dock to dock, like some Amazon routes you'd be able to do, or you could work for broker companies or even some warehouses.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, in these kinds of jobs, I don't think I would never have thought of it, but I get calls at least twice a week from people who say, you know, I just lost my job. I'm having a hard time finding a job. I'm homeless. I need a job. And so having ideas for people when they call me is very, you know, it's going to be super helpful.
If I may add, I have my friend who ended up screwing up at a trucking company and going and moving on to another opportunity. What they do now is literally just move trucks around in a yard. So they don't even have to go anywhere. They stay in the same yard. They take the truck. They, you know, get it moved over for inspection, or they move it over, you know, across the yard for repairs, or they move it over for fueling or whatever, so that it's ready so that when the actual drivers come in, they're still a driver. They still have to have a CDL to do that, but they don't have to go anywhere. So there are weird jobs like that where that's sort of it's the loading kind of, I guess, niche. And that's what you do. And then, you know, you're done. You don't have to even leave the bounds. And there are adjacent jobs, tons of them. So if this doesn't appeal to you, or if driving or you can't pass the health thing or whatever else, there are adjacent jobs that I think work in this field too. It's a whole world of opportunities, not just, you know, for people who, I don't know, have great driving records and want to be on the road.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, if anybody has questions for Joshua or Elizabeth, please raise your hand. And let's see, what were the other ideas that I had? So I had the person who called me and said, look on the registry itself and see where the dots are. And then if we have a minute and nobody has a question right now, I'm going to go ahead and read this. So my friend Paul called about working in the nonprofit field. And if we got a minute, I'm going to read this out loud. So this is called Leading with Conviction. This title comes from my 2024 fellowship with Just Leadership USA, but it also reflects how I move through my work and my life. For me, leading with conviction means refusing to hide the truth of my past and choosing instead to lead from it. It means grounding leadership in lived experience, accountability, and clarity about what justice actually requires. This essay is about what becomes possible when a criminal record is treated not as a liability, but as a sort of insight, source of insight, credibility, and purpose. My name is Paul Rothschild. I was convicted of a sex offense and served 8.5 years in federal prison. I name that plainly because it matters. In most professional spaces, that history is something you are expected to hide, minimize, or fear will eventually be discovered and used against you. In social justice, and particularly in criminal justice reform, my experience is different. My past is not a secret or a liability, it's a credential. I work in social justice because it is one of a few fields where lived experience is understood as real expertise. I lead operations, narrative, and statewide campaigns at npp.org.
I'm meeting right now.
including efforts like Slate, Illinois. My work focuses on dismantling permanent punishments and expanding access to stability, dignity, and opportunity for people with records. None of this work is as grounded or as effective without my own experience of incarceration and the long road back to belonging. In many careers, having a record creates constant anxiety. You worry about background checks, disclosure, office politics, whether your past will resurface and cost you your job. In social justice places, I do not live with that fear. I lead with the truth of who I am. That freedom fundamentally changes how you show up at work. When colleagues know your story, you no longer feel pressure to manage their comfort or hide parts of yourself to belong. Your insights are trusted because they are lived, not theoretical. Your voice carries weight because it is rooted in experience. It would be dishonest to say that stigma never appears in social justice spaces. There are moments when people draw distinctions between different types of convictions, and sex offenses in particular can carry additional judgment. But what defines my experience is how rare those moments are. The vast majority of people I work with are deeply welcoming. They do not treat my conviction as something to tiptoe around or hold against me. Instead, they center my commitment to accountability, growth, and collective liberation. Those values matter far more than the details of my charge, and that orientation shapes nearly every space I am in. I collaborate with and work alongside national organizations and campaigns that actively value directly impacted leadership. Just Leadership USA centers people with records as movement leaders. The Clean Slate Initiative advances record clearance policy across the country while elevating directly impacted voices at every level. Dream.org and the Formerly Incarcerated and Convicted People and Families Movement invest nationally in people who have lived the harm and are building solutions. Oh, wow, this is long. Reform Alliance works across the country to reform probation and parole systems with dignity and opportunity at the center. These are not fringe organizations. They shape policy, culture, and narrative at a national scale. It is also important to zoom out. Every state and many cities are home to hundreds or even thousands of criminal justice organizations. Some focus on direct services like reentry support, housing, employment, or violence interruption. Others focus on advocacy, policy reform, litigation, research, or community organizing. There's no single entry point into this field. For people exploring work in this space, state and local reentry guides are an excellent resource. These guides often list service providers, advocacy groups, and community-based organizations that both understand lived experience and actively seek it out. For many people, the real entry point into social work is much simpler than formal job application. You start by showing up. You attend meetings, trainings, teach-ins, rallies, or community events. You listen, ask questions, and offer help. If you keep showing up and demonstrate genuine interest, people begin to trust you. They give you small things to do. If you do those things well, they give you more responsibility. Over time, that trust turns into leadership opportunities, paid roles, and long-time work. This field is built on relationships, and consistency matters as much as credentials. Working in social justice transforms a past that once feels like a permanent mark into a source of purpose. My history does not disappear. It becomes useful. It becomes grounding. It becomes a bridge to others and a lens for understanding how systems harm and how they can be changed. For people with records, including those with the most stigmatized convictions, this field offers something rare. It offers the possibility that your full truth belongs in your work, and that who you are is not an obstacle to justice work, but one of the reasons you are needed. And then he lists all the different organizations he's worked for. And I put the link to this in the chat. So if you want to, you know, look later and like remember something I just read in Paul's, I think, awesome comments, you can look it up later. Okay, we still have 13 minutes left. We got questions, comments, raise your hand and join me in a community conversation. Ron.
Yeah, you know, I got out and moved up here to Michigan, and I didn't know what I was going to do. I had great experience in warehouse, and I know I'm very proficient in it. And from what I know, I could probably do extremely well in a warehouse. But while I was incarcerated, I had also entered a second chance program where I had received grant money to further my education. And I started working on a communications degree with a double minor of sociology and religion. Those three seemed to kind of fit together. And I'm very big into religion. It's been a big factor in my life. And without getting into that, I will continue with, when I got out and moved up here, I didn't want to be just a Yeah, you all know the word statistic. Yeah, thank you. So I wanted to do something to help to change. And I can't do that if I just sit back and do nothing. So I got in touch with a group, Michigan Citizens for Justice. It's headed by Kathy, wonderful lady. And also got in touch with Jim, who's with MeCEMI, Michigan Citizens to End Mass Incarceration. And I have fantasies of giving these wonderful speeches and whatnot. I like doing the research. I like finding the facts. I like just being able to provide something. It may not affect me, but it's going to affect somebody down the road. That's the change I want to make. And, you know, just knowing that I'm a part of something that I know will be changed. It's not going to stay like this forever. If you look at the number of registered citizens, there's just way too many. And for
I
this
agree.
country to sit there and say, no, we can't have these people, you know, no, you can't shut us out. There's too many of us.
Yeah, and
So,
when you consider that every one of you has, at least five people that love you, there's a lot of people who are learning that this is bullshit and know it can be better.
exactly. And I even had informed some of my coworkers and my boss about some things going on up here in Michigan, introducing a bill that they don't want us working in places where we would have unsupervised access to minors, that if the business focuses more towards minors. Oh, yeah, fast food. Where do I work? Wendy's. Yeah, that's right. My boss was astounded. She's like, where do they expect you all to work? You know? Okay. So, you know, I'm getting people on board. My parole officers, I've had two of them, wonderful people. The first one encouraged me. She was like another counselor. She guided me through a lot of things. When she left, this other one that took over, I explained my situation to him, and he's like, so if you were back in Missouri, when would you be off? I said, I'd have been off back in July of last year. He's like, would you want to move back? I was like, it's not going to work that way. And I explained to him why. He's like, this is stupid. He's an advocate for when people are done with their time, let them move on. That's great right there. So yeah, if there's anything I can do, I really do enjoy research. I enjoy writing. I've listed myself on LinkedIn as a freelance editor, proofreader, and writer. Although I've not taken any jobs yet, it's something that I enjoy. Society is so complex, and each individual is even more complex. And I love looking at all that. I want to understand the why and the hows. And yeah, I know someday I will make a difference. So, and I am going to be in touch with you, and
Excellent.
tomorrow. Get some more information from you. Got lots of questions and stuff. So,
Awesome. All right, I look
great.
forward to it. Okay, Mike, you're up.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, since I retired, and so I'm not really looking for work, but I've ran into struggles with doing volunteer work, but I have managed to get into doing some yard care cemeteries. That should start next summer. And then I was also successfully able to join our volunteer fire department. So I've been training for 6 weeks to just get familiar with the equipment and, you know, mainly on maintenance nights. But I mean, since I'm retired, I don't have the burden of feeding a family. So that's not the same situation. But
It's still
my.
helpful to have like a meaningful thing to do every day. I mean, it's still nice to feel like you got a task in the world.
Yeah, well, it gives me more to do than sit here and twiddle my thumbs, because I'm a firm believer in people need to see registrants in the humanity. We've already preached that. I mean, but right now I'm still running into that social stigma. Everybody that's on the registry is I don't like the term, but you know, child molester and all those. When people start to see us doing something that is worthwhile and
Yeah,
see,
they need to. We need to come out of the shadows and
get out there and let people start to understand our humanity.
I've heard the term cocooning. Mm-hmm. You know, people shell up and stuff. So, but I mean, that's the approach that I'm using. I've started going around. I started noticing people were throwing away perfectly good canned foods in the dumpsters. So I just went around to my neighbors and said, hey, instead of, don't throw the food away, leave it by my door. And then, so I've been taking, you know, several boxes of food to the food pantries and stuff.
Who throws away food?
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't, because that's why I weigh what I do.
Well, like, it's just it just seems so wrong. I don't throw away anything that's useful to anyone. I'm going to find a home for everything.
Yeah, if I don't eat it, I donate it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but I mean, that's how I'm, now, not everybody that I'm dealing with knows that I was a registrant at one time, and, you know, all that. But I've also noticed, you know, Facebook and Google is not your friend, because I was even off the registry before I moved to my town I'm at now. And I actually caught more flack from what Google had said that was incorrect information. So, I mean, my fire chief knows that I at one time was on the registry. He's seen the post that I saved, you know, so he knows. And, you know, he made some modifications in what I do. And, you know, I'm probably not going to ever go into a school by myself, but, you know, they don't stop. But I mean, that's part of what I'm doing as a retired individual to show that registrants can be productive and do something
about it. And do you do this by yourself, Mike, or do you connect with other people in your area?
The fire department, of course, is a large group of people.
No, I mean, like, when you go volunteer, is it just you volunteering, or do you find other registrants to volunteer with you?
Right now it's just by myself, but I would really like to figure out a way to get people to come out of their.
Yeah, I love that idea. And Mike, you want to call me sometime? I could see if we could find some people in your area that I could hook you up with. Yeah, I think that's could be a great little, like, a, what do you call it? When you start a project, I can't think of the word, but a pilot program. It could be a great little pilot program we could try.
I don't know if this is practical, but I was looking, you know, just for marketing strategy, doing like an adopt a highway. First, I started with the billboard. That's probably cost prohibitive. But like, if you adopt a highway, you could put the signs up. The highway department puts it up for free, and you're only obligated to go pick up trash a couple times a year or something like that. So do that, and then kind of have a barbecue. You're walking alongside the interstate, you know?
Yeah.
So that's, you're not going to have anybody under 18 doing that, but that's just an idea that, you know, but the advertisement's basically free. So.
Yeah. All right. We got 2 minutes left. So I want to make sure Aaron gets a chance to ask his question. Aaron.
Yes, I'm here. I'm in my vehicle. So there may be some background noise. I apologize for that.
No problem.
I would like to back up what's all been said about jobs. I'm a registrant myself, used to be a school teacher, principal, superintendent. Obviously those careers are gone. So I looked at what I might be able to do and tolerate for the next however long it's going to take to retire. And so I also pursued a CDL. I'm a commercial truck driver on my way into work tonight, and would like to back up the fact that, yes, that is a very open career for people with backgrounds. And, you know, I started with a smaller company, and the owner's response when he handed over the consent to a background application, and I'm like, well, here's what we need to talk. So I told him, I said, here's what it was. It has nothing to do with my driving. And once he was assured that it was nothing driving related, he's like, well, he shrugged his shoulders and he said, you know what? People make mistakes. Shit happens. We can work with it. So, unfortunately, about a year ago, that company went out of business. But that experience that I gained working there allowed me to easily move into a position with a different company. So it's anybody thinking about truck driving as a career, it is it's a great option. Nice. I'm home every day, and I'll probably make $100,000 this year. Ooh. And so it's a good, you know, good paying position as well.
That's nice. Yeah, I mean, that beats most a lot of people's careers.
I make more driving a semi than I did working as a school superintendent. Let's just say that.
Wow. What does that tell us? Good gravy.
Exactly. Yep.
All right. So I want to respect everyone's time. It's 8:31, but I do want to tell you how to save the chat, because there's details on how to reach out to, you know, various people if you have any further questions. So if you open the chat and there's those three little dots that say more, you click on those three dots and then it'll say save chat. And then after you end the meeting, that chat will just pop up on your screen. It won't be quite so pretty. It's a little bit annoying to look at, but at least all the information in there will be there. The link to that guy's long leading with conviction thing that I read. And if anybody has any questions at any time, you're always welcome to call me on the helpline. I'm going to put that in the chat. And I, you know, I'll do what I can do, connect you with whoever I need to connect you with. And I appreciate everybody's time. Josh is going to come over in hot tub with me, I think. And Elizabeth, you're also welcome to come over in hot tub with me if you want. My last night in St. Louis. Boo-hoo. All right. Thank you, everybody. Love you. Let's see. In 2 weeks, I think I have a guy coming from, well, that's a long story. But anyway, I've got some good speakers lined up for the next few war rooms. So I look forward to seeing you all in the future. And thank you, everybody, for coming. And love you all. Bye.